Really? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes, that is exciting. Yeah. Yeah, like on the plane, like.
So in flight, that he like took the mask off and like, put it back on.
And they're gonna like thrown out. Like, well, when they land, everybody buckle up. We're about to open up that emergency sure, hatch. No, you want to know why we have it? Here it is, folks.
Yeah. There's a raft.
Between here and Vegas, you don't need a raft.
Indiana Jones had a raft, and he landed
that's
on
true.
A mountain.
Indiana Jones was fine. Yeah.
What does he hope to accomplish by this?
Clearly, his goal was to not wear a mask. I think that was
mission accomplished. You cannot wear a mask in your
well
own
done.
House.
Congratulations. You know, like, you cannot wear a mask, and now you can go to prison for disobeying a flight attendant.
Yeah.
And I think they have make you wear masks in prison too. Maybe.
Wouldn't that be sweet justice?
Poetic.
Get sent to prison for not wearing a mask. You don't have to wear it.
Yes. It's like Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah, exactly.
Strapped to his face. Yeah. All right, welcome back. To the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith to Beyond Sunday morning. There we go. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are you doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Okay.
$1.25,
Richard. All right.
$1, yes, in Vegas.
Breaking
the
whole,
how much did you spend to earn your $1.25?
Oh.
Doesn't matter. She came out $1.25 ahead. That's all that matters.
Well... I lost like $10.
Hey, you got to spend money to make money. So, you know, like, that's
not good business or gambling strategy. Okay.
My first time on a slot machine. So,
okay. It's really, it's not like that complicated.
Right.
Pull a lever, and then the thing does all the work.
You have to, like, make bets in increments, and I had no idea what I was doing, so I was like, max bet, max bet, max
okay.
bet.
Two turns later, it's got $10. Okay.
I don't think many people out there are like, I've got a system on where I, on how I pull this lever. I mean, I'm sure they do,
actually,
and they're, in their mind, I don't think it's effective.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that, like, poker would be more my speed.
Yeah, well, that's more of a social game, yeah.
Not about
right.
to go to, like, I would,
I'd be really good at poker, except I don't know how to play it.
Sure,
so,
sure.
You know.
I've been to Vegas a handful of times. It was, you know, fun for what it is.
But we didn't find Arizona Charlie's. We meant to track that down.
No, so that's a casino I stayed in when I was in college. We drove out to Vegas, me and my buddies, and stayed in, like, the worst casino.
Sure.
I mean,
is this
people...
like the casino in the Vacation movie where it's, like, all stupid, like, you know, pick what's behind my finger or behind my back games? Or like...
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, that, kind of the same buffet of, like, oh, what is this that's
odds
here?
Or evens. Or,
like, it definitely had... people on oxygen, smoking, you know?
Yeah, people on oxygen, smoking, that's,
playing the slots. I think at one point I was playing blackjack next to a guy who was crying, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like,
I feel bad inside.
I know, like, oh, I just want to gamble this $100 that I've saved, and I don't care if I lose because it's for fun.
Right.
And this person is not having fun.
This is very serious.
This has gotten dark.
Yikes. Yeah. All right, so... All right, so
is
let's.
This is where we put in our PSA about gambling addiction and who you can call if you're.
Yes,
so,
there are people out there.
Yeah,
I don't know
it's
the
a
number.
Real thing.
Well, you can Google it.
Yeah.
If seek you help. Have a gambling addiction and you're listening to this podcast,
you
seek help.
How to use Google.
We definitely.
If you have a gambling addiction, you're probably not listening to this podcast because you're probably gambling.
Maybe. Maybe they got, you know, earbud in. They're listening to this on the slot machine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the system.
Of all the things.
Beyond Sunday is lucky.
Nope. Nope, can't say that. That's
all right. Are you familiar with Shazam?
The old movie with...
not the movie.
Oh.
With the music identification app.
Oh, I was thinking of the ShamWow. That was going to be my next guess. The Shazam.
Dave is not familiar with Shazam.
I'm not. What's Shazam?
Shazam is you would play a song, like a portion of a song, or hum it, and Shazam would tell you what song it is, kind
Ooh,
of thing.
Okay. I make this up all the time. Like, I just play a portion of a song, and I make up names for it.
Okay.
Because I don't know the real name, so I'm like,
sure,
oh, this song
sure.
should be called this.
Well, an Australian company has now invented a Shazam for spiders.
So you listen to a spider make
now
noise, and
you
it
take
can tell
a
you...
photo of the spider,
oh, okay.
and it tells you, is this spider venomous?
That's useful information.
For a second, I was like, wait, do spiders say?
What have I been missing?
Spider call.
Yes. And in Australia, I guess they need this because
everything's deadly in Australia.
Because somebody who moved there invented this, and they're like, they kept taking photos of spiders to send to friends. Like, will this thing kill me?
Dude, if you're in Australia, just assume it will kill you.
Right? Yeah.
Every time you hear about the most deadly animals or whatever, they all live in Australia. So
yeah,
just assume it's going to kill you.
So let me ask you: Are you afraid of spiders?
No.
No, you're not afraid. I'm not afraid of them either. I like spiders.
I mean, I don't like want to be in one of those, a fear factor things where like you're in a coffin with filled with spiders. Like, I don't want that. But yeah. If I see a spider, I'm just like, oh, look, a spider. Yes.
In college, I watched that with a friend, and she was watching them put like tarantulas or bugs on people, and she was really screaming. She's like, oh, why couldn't it have been kittens? That's not really fear factor at this point.
I don't think you understand the premise of this.
Just sit there and get covered in kittens. Yeah, so I'm also not very afraid of spiders, but some people out there are afraid of spiders. My wife is afraid of spiders. She's not a fan.
Does she like call you in to dispose of said spiders anytime there's a spider incident?
I have killed spiders in her house that she does not want there. I'm fine with them. Like they eat the bad bugs.
Right. Yeah.
They're just chilling. He's just living his life. Yeah. I'm fine with him living his life. Are there other bugs you are afraid of though?
Bugs. There are bugs that startle me.
Sure.
I like the phrasing of that.
Like
they startle me. Like I'm afraid. They startle
like,
me.
You see, like you pull up a thing and suddenly like a cockroach is running across the thing, right? Yeah. Like that'll like oh that'll make you jump. But I'm also not like okay this cockroach can't hurt me. I just need to squash this thing. Yeah, so I'm not afraid of it. It's startling.
Literally
my
worst fear. So
cockroaches.
Yeah.
You live in the wrong part of the world for cockroaches to be your worst fear. Yeah. And you came from South Carolina, which is even worse. Like
yeah, they're literally everywhere. Yeah. So.
But they're called palmetto bugs there.
And they're like that big. Right. As big as cats.
Yeah.
Sure.
Why couldn't it be
kittens? Every time a cockroach comes out from under the pantry. If only it was a kitten running out.
That Indiana Jones line would have landed a lot differently.
Yes.
Kittens.
Man, we're already off the rails.
Yeah.
It's Thanksgiving week.
It is the week of Thanksgiving.
We're all ready for a little break. Joyful. A little turkey, a little gravy. Except for Patrick, who hates all things delicious and Thanksgiving.
We actually already celebrated. Yeah, it's Thanksgiving as time of recording.
Already celebrated Thanksgiving.
And we had steak, yes.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's fine,
yes. So this is, the app is called Crittertopia?
Crittertopia? That's
Crittertopia.
Cool.
Crittopedia. Crittopedia.
That's the movie.
Sorry, Crittopedia.
Crittopedia.
So you take a photo of your bug, and it'll tell you what bug this might be. So you could upload a picture of a snake, a spider, things like that.
Snakes are not bugs.
Oh, okay. They're critters.
All right. They are a critter, but...
Yes. Have you ever been bitten by a venomous spider?
Not to my knowledge. I have had some like weird bites that I've like assumed were like a mosquito bite, but then I'm like, oh, that's getting weird, but then it goes away.
Sure.
So yeah. It might have been a spider.
Yeah, my roommate in college got bitten by a brown recluse.
Ooh, that's bad news.
At
bears.
A golf course. Yeah.
Did he lose anything?
He did not lose anything. I mean, like a quarter size, like chunk of his calf, like was kind of like indented and like dissolved away kind of
cool.
thing.
Yeah.
So it was kind of gross to look at and weird, you know, like that. This large portion of his leg was taken out.
The first time I ever took a CPR first aid class to get certified in that, our instructor was like obsessed with brown recluse. And I'm pretty sure there were other things that we were supposed to learn about, but we spent a lot of time talking about what to do if you get bit by a brown recluse spider. It's like, what do I do if I splint a broken leg? Don't worry about it. Yeah. Just here's what happens if you brown
recluse. What about a black widow? What do they go for that one?
I had nothing to say about that. It's all brown recluse.
Yeah, to my knowledge, you've never been bitten by anything venomous.
Yeah. I think we would know, right?
Probably, right? Maybe, you know, there are some low-level venoms and some spiders that, you know, may not affect you very much. It's not one of the big ones. Here in America, the brown recluse or the black widow.
Yeah, you'd probably know at some point with either one of those, I guess.
I think there would be some...
Because your cap would start dissolving away, apparently.
Yeah, yes. Stuff just starts to go.
Yes. I did... we had a girl at the camp I worked at. She did get bitten by a water moccasin on her leg.
That's no bueno.
Yes. And then she came back the next year, and her friend were telling me about this experience. And her friend said, oh, it was worse for me because I had to see it. And I was like, I don't think that is worse for you. Because she had to get airlifted to a hospital in Austin, Texas, and then like was on crutches for 9 months. Right. So
I don't think you understand what the phrase worse for me means. Yeah.
But I had to see the snake. I'm like, okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. Critterpedia, if you're interested in snakes or creepy crawlies and you want to know, is this poisonous? My wife does ask me often, like, is this spider a brown recluse? I'm like, it's not. It's one, it's not reclusive. Two, it's not brown. So,
I don't know.
I don't think the reclusive is actually.
It's part of it. They're supposed to be like in, you know, secluded areas, like maybe in your attic or your basement or your
closet. I mean, all spiders are supposed to be there. They're not.
Be an extrovert. It's been a long quarantine.
The brown extrovert. The most terrifying spiders of all. It's like,
Want to go get drinks? Oh, no.
Man, we're off. We are off the rails.
Yes. You're all good.
Moving on. Okay, so our main story.
Right.
Masculinity in
spiders.
The church.
Oh, masculinity in spiders. Okay.
Yes. Masculinity in the church.
Spider masculinity.
This is an article from Christianity Today.
Okay.
Saying making your church more masculine won't necessarily attract new people.
I don't even really know what that means, but I'm intrigued by the title.
Okay. I think the title has almost nothing to do with the content.
Okay.
I was like, okay.
Yeah, so what would you think you would need to do to make a church more masculine?
I mean, if we're just going like straight stereotypes.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I assume, yeah.
Yeah, if we're going straight stereotypes, then you probably got Hans and Franz up front, you know, with a weight bench in the back and maybe some
brown leather pews.
Yeah, leather pews, probably some antlers hanging around.
Sure. Okay, oh, I like that. Some,
like Gaston's chair.
Yes. And, yes, yeah, uh-huh. Yep, sure. Yeah.
Nothing's more masculine than referencing Beauty and the Beast. I'm saying that.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Maybe like the, you know, instead of processing in, the pastor comes in on a Harley.
Sure.
You know,
that'd be a cool way to do it. Yeah. There's probably access to sports within the venue. Sports. Like whether that's on, that's how men say these things, right? Whether that's like on the TV or whatnot. Probably lots of gatherings centered around manly type things. So
yeah.
Chili cook-offs and.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm flexing Bible studies. Yeah.
B.O.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Is B.O. a manly thing? Huh?
I think so, right? Yeah. Like, you think it's stereotypically manly.
I don't find it manly to smell bad. It's, you know, it's...
Okay.
But you know, I don't know.
Power tools, grilling, you know, things like that. Those would be the traditional manly things. So, yeah, so this is going to take a thing like...
Which is not to say that women can't do any of those things.
Of course, of course. Or, and also not to say if you are a man and not into those things, you're any less of a man.
Totally cool. Yeah. But stereotypically, that's,
Sure. Yeah. We wisely put the disclaimer at the end of all the things.
We've already said the thing.
All right, so there's a crisis of men in the church. This is how it starts off, this article. So,
No, wait, that's the wrong noise.
So first off, let me ask you, is there a crisis of men in the church?
I don't know what they mean by a crisis of men.
There
is not a shortage of male leadership in the church, if that's what we mean by a crisis of men. And so, no, there is. I mean, unless the crisis of men is that there's too many men in leadership, which then it might also be true. But I don't think that's what they mean either. So,
yeah.
Elise is like jumping out of her chair. Over here. She's very excited.
We were just talking about this before you came in.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
Look at this. This is like, you know, my presentient. Not presentient. What's it mean when you know?
I think you were listening outside the.
What's it mean when you know something before it happens? Omniscient.
ESP.
No, ESP. I don't know. Anyway.
Whatever.
Move on.
Yeah. So, this is Mark Driscoll. He was the pastor of Mars Hill Church in Seattle.
That's not who wrote this article, though.
He did not. Okay. Well, I assume not.
This is just a quote that he has.
Mark Driscoll is a very manly man pastor. Very very.
By his own definition.
By his own definition, yes. I don't know if he would say I'm a manly man, because I don't think manly men say that. Yes. But,
feels like a giveaway.
But he says this: the problem with the church today, it's a bunch of nice, soft, tender, chickified church boys.
Chickified.
60% of Christians are chicks, and the 40% that are dudes are still chicks.
Yikes!
That's
disgusting.
Mark Driscoll sounds like a jerk. Yeah. Oof.
Have you not watched any Mark Driscoll or listened to him at all?
No, he's
clearly not. Like, I'm sure I've crossed paths with some of
this
stuff,
but not
that quote. Yeah.
Not a podcast about Mark Driscoll, but he was pastor of Mars Hill in Seattle. Some not-so-great things came out about him, and then he was removed from his position of leadership. And I think now he started a church plant in Phoenix.
Cool.
Hopefully more manly men there for him to hang out with.
Probably more manly men in Phoenix than in Seattle, right?
Yes.
Nothing against Seattleites, but...
So
there's a lot of skinny jeans in Seattle, so I guess that's like
sure.
Seattle. Did you hear that?
The Seattle.
Sure. Some man buns, you know, some hipster dudes are probably up there. I can imagine it. So here's from the article. As the argument goes, where men go, churches grow. Or alternatively, where men lead, women follow.
I'm sorry.
Those kinds of connotations, especially in church, can imply that having a large number of women is bad for church growth.
This is abhorrent.
Yes. And by the way, this article is not condoning or supporting those types of thought phrases or things that this person is saying.
They're taking their time to prove that they are saying
they are saying this is often how some churches talk, that they want to attract.
I think we do need to say that at the end, if you do choose to read this article, maybe they support some of these thoughts.
We'll get to there. We'll get there. We'll get there. The end is, you know, her conclusions are interesting. So,
all right. We'll come to our own conclusions. Yeah. But first, which will probably also be interesting.
But first, okay, so this is kind of saying, and I think that there is some legitimacy to this, that even though many churches have a lot of male leadership at the top, many churches, when you think of second tier, behind the scenes leaders, Sunday school teachers, who's cleaning stuff up, kind of doing the work of church ministry throughout the week, those are often occupied by female spaces or volunteers.
Yeah.
And that a typical Sunday morning might have a greater percentage of female worshipers than male worshipers.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, looking at our church here, you know, we can probably say there's probably about maybe a 60-40 female to male worshiper on Sunday morning. Would you, I mean, you're there.
Yeah, I couldn't say it for sure on Sunday mornings, but yeah, that's probably about right. And certainly if I'm looking at like leadership of who's doing stuff on a Sunday morning, who's like leading and participating in worship and that stuff, it's, especially if we're including the behind the scenes, then yeah, 60-40 is probably about right. But of the people, I mean, and we were talking about this before the podcast as well, of the people that you see leading worship, more often than not, it's highly male in our context. I mean, prior to Pastor Gary's retirement, we had two male pastors who were up front every Sunday. We often had male assisting ministers who were helping to lead prayers. And so there'd be, you know, only male leadership up front. And that's, yeah, it's a stark visual that is very contrasting to the makeup of the congregation. But I will say that, you know, we're fortunate that in a lot of, you know, council leadership and things like that, we do have a better balance.
Sure.
It's not perfect, and we're not, but, you know, it's
better. And I think it's in some ways, you know, trying to be as intentional as possible to get that better balance, because it doesn't happen necessarily
naturally
or organically, you know, or it sometimes seems to be guided to a more natural organic state. Yeah. And that's fair. So we can say, all right, maybe Christianity as a whole, especially here in the West, has a greater female influence in the pews, in those kind of behind the scenes, in the small term, you know, maybe not church leadership at the top, but maybe those second rung or third rung types of leadership, an overwhelming percentage of female things. And so they're saying, is that bad to get men to come to church if there's too many women, or if the church is too feminine in how it approaches worship or ministry? All right, so she is going to say, well, one, this is wrong. The Christianity is no more feminine today than it was 50, 100, or 300,000 or first century church. So we have not, the church has not grown more feminine.
Okay.
But it was always pretty feminine.
Yeah.
So it's not, they're not disputing the maybe more females are active in those, you know, second or third rungs, or there's more females active in presence. They're saying it always was that way.
Mm-hmm.
This is not anything new. No. So to say that this may be a crisis in our homes where we see mom bring kids to church while dad stays home, that's not necessarily a new thing.
Yeah.
So what do we do with this here? So if we're saying, okay, it's not anything new, but it is predominantly females in the church. So maybe let's pause here and break away from this article a little bit and come back to it. What do we do with that information? As you're a professional church worker, I'm a professional church worker. Elise is on our...
And Elise is
here.
I showed up today.
You're in the room.
Yeah. And Elise is on our church council. And you know, so she...
And you're a woman in the church.
I am. Yeah, yes. Female.
Yeah, all right. but, I mean, you're a family that comes to church.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, your husband comes on his own, comes on his own with Gray, and you know, has you here, and Gray's your child, not just another person that your husband comes to church with. Yeah. Just clarify that.
clarify.
So, I mean, and so you're not necessarily the typical experience, but I think I know of families here who are typically mom brings kids, and or mom's heavily involved, and dad's on the periphery, and we kind of see dad periodically. you know, it is tough. It's tough to get men connected to faith and religion for a variety of reasons, but all of those reasons, I think, are rooted in unfair stereotypes about what we would now kind of define as like almost toxic masculinity, right? Yeah. And it's not necessarily toxic in its intention, but I think it's all rooted in that same place and in that culture of, well, men are supposed to be strong, or men are supposed to be, you know, not in touch with their feelings, or men are not supposed to be worried about how other people feel, or, you know, whatever that thing is that has defines how a man is supposed to act. A lot of those come in conflict with how Jesus acted and what the church calls us to. Sure. And so when you come to a place like a church that's saying, hey, you should be compassionate, you should be expressing care and concern for others, you should be sitting with people at their bedside when they're dying, you should be, you know, generous even to people who maybe don't deserve it, you know, those are not inherently manly, and I'll, you know, be putting that in quotes, characteristics. And so if your view of manhood is living into the kind of worldly view of what a man is supposed to be, then the church is going to be highly in conflict with that. And that's going to be a tough bridge to cross.
Yeah, I wondered too, because like my experience, and you know, just anecdotal experience, is that most men are not necessarily against those things. You know, it's just they are more uncomfortable with the expression of those things, or the support aspect. And the church is very much a place of support and expression, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's just more not like a natural fit for people more than it is like a aversion.
Yeah. Well, even like, right, Jesus says, you know, if someone strikes you on the cheek, turn the other cheek, right? I don't know of a dad, except my own father, maybe, who would like tell a kid like, hey, don't fight back, right? If you get into a fight at school, don't fight. Like,
yeah.
That's not our standard MO. Yeah. And so we subconsciously hear something like that, and we start to think, well, this isn't a place for me, or this doesn't line up with how I want to exist in the world. Like, I want to be able to fight back. I don't want to have to sit there and take it, right? And because that's not, it's not appealing to my manliness or my sense of manhood. And just using that word kind of makes me, I don't know, cringe, because it's like, what are we even talking about when we get out?
Well, I think these are all, we're butting up against a Western culture that has things to say to men, and then a church that has maybe slightly different or completely different, ranging from that things to say to men in our culture. I mean, I can say I grew up watching Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone blow things up in action movies as the standard of masculinity, in a sense of like, these were the movies that were men did man things.
And robots. Robots did man things.
Well, yeah, and Arnold Schwarzenegger was a robot, but a manly robot, yes. Yeah. And then, you know, that was tough being like, wow, Arnold is this giant mountain of a human being who doesn't even look like a human being half the time because he's so big. And I'm some scrawny 5'3" kid in sixth grade who cries at the movies. It's really like, how do I reconcile these two things that are happening? Like, that's the standard. Here's me. And I obviously don't reach that standard. What do you do with that? You know, kind of a thing. And so coming to church, and I think Elise hit on this, sometimes church has a lot of emotional aspects or support aspects to it. Sometimes our language that we use is more emotional. The songs are meant often to have an emotional appeal to people and an emotional drive. And so if you are not an emotionally driven person, and I can say I am, so, you know, that those things can work for me. But if you're not, and again, stereotypically, men are more likely to not be, what do those things say to you? What are they communicating to you in, when you're part of the congregation? How do you connect? Especially if those just don't work, you know? And so I think that that does give us a question of like, and I think that oftentimes we're saying like, well, how can we make the church more appealing to men? Because then it would grow more. And so this article is saying, you don't have to do that for your church to grow. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you should not be more appealing to men or people who do not approach God that way. We can say that, you know, you know, you still should be very conscious of that. But it's not like the church has been female driven since the beginning of the church. And that's, maybe let's pause there and like, let's talk a little about history right here.
Sure.
The church has been female driven since the history of church. Because probably when it comes down to the early church, if I were to say to people like, hey, you know, your average Christian, you went to Sunday school, name people that were involved in the early church. You're going to name some guys. Yeah. You know, like that's probably what you're going to say.
Paul, Timothy.
Sure. Peter, right? You know,
Jesus.
Jesus. Oh, you know, all the disciples, all the named disciples we have are men.
Yep.
All the people we say wrote a book of the Bible are men in the New Testament. So, you know, we have a very high level of men visible when we read our Bibles. But I think the author here is going to make the argument, and I think it's a compelling one, that the congregations were really not made up of more men
yeah.
than women. That then maybe
it wasn't male centric.
Maybe it was a lot of women in these places. So well,
the first witnesses to the resurrection were women.
Yes,
and you know I think that's something we kind of gloss over because you know it just kind of happens, and we're like, oh, and then the disciples showed up and went to the tomb, but
yeah.
you know Mary is the first person that Jesus appears to in that context, and that's worth remembering as well.
Yeah. So she said she's going to quote here. Father Cecil of Jerusalem, in the 4th century, is opening up his lectures to the men of the congregation. He says this. Possibly, too, you two have come in another pretext. It's possible that a man is wishing to pay court to a woman and came hither on that account. I accept.
Are you going to translate this for us? Okay.
I accept this bait for the hook and welcome you, that you came with an evil purpose, yet as one you saved by a good hope. Yes. I
appreciate that for a second.
Well, I think what he's saying, like, look, we know you guys came here because your wives, fiancés, and girlfriends dragged you here.
Yeah.
You know, like, you came because they said you should come here.
Yeah.
And now you're here. Let's talk. You know, like, mm-hmm. but they're acknowledging you were not the driving factor for your family or relationship or couple or whatever it is to get here. Your significant other, your female partner was getting you in the door. And so, you know, we can see that, you know, happen often in some of these early languages or things like that. So another point that she'll bring out is in AD 303,
that's what that number is.
Here's a, you know, Rodney Stark, historian, talks about a church has was seized by the oppressive government at the time to seize the goods that they had been collecting to distribute in the poor.
Oh, okay.
So clothing that was given to this church to distribute in the poor. And of the clothing, 16 men tunics, 82 female tunics. So you're imagining people in the congregation are giving these things.
Giving their own clothing.
And so if there's more likely female clothing, you could say maybe you could extrapolate.
Maybe
it's a higher percentage of females in the church.
Right.
And when we look at kind of the second or third rung leaders in the New Testament even, we're going to see a lot of – that's where a lot of female names will come up.
Mm-hmm.
At least you mentioned Timothy before, but it takes time in the Bible to tell us Timothy was trained in faith by his mother and grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dad and grandfather are not part of that conversation.
Yep.
Mom and grandmother were training him in faith. So we're seeing that, like, the influence and the impact of a female, or, you know, females in worship had on the males around them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that you could make that case, you know, like, again.
It's big in Jewish culture, too, because in Jewish culture, you're actually only considered, I don't know exactly how this works, but you're considered Jewish if you're born to a Jewish mother,
mm-hmm.
not if you're born to a Jewish father. So if your father is Jewish, but you're practicing Jewish, but your mother is not a practicing Jew, you're not considered Jewish. But if your mother is practicing Jewish, and so that matriarchal lineage, mm-hmm. am I saying that? Yeah, that matriarchal lineage is historically important in Judaism as well, and probably carried over to the early Christians because the early Christians were also Jews.
Yeah.
P.S. Early Christians were also Jews.
Yeah, and so I think that there's probably some truth here that potentially when, you could argue, like when Paul is writing to the rules of the church and he's writing to men as rules about leadership or things like that, and that's because that's really the only men that were in the church were the leaders and people who were kind of in charge of stuff. So they have to have all their rules because they're the only ones there to actually be there for Jesus. And then there's a lot of rules for women, and maybe they're giving all those rules because that's who's in the congregation, you know, like, so here's how you, the congregation, needs to be operating, and potentially, maybe you're mostly female, and so it's not necessarily just rules for women, it's just like, that's who that's there.
Yeah.
You know,
I find this
argument interesting. I can't say I'm 100% like, that's definitely the truth, but I find it compelling enough to say, I think there's merit to the point she brings up and worthiness to say, okay, I think that these things sound interesting and potentially ring true.
Yeah. And so, one of the things that the author draws out as well is, you know, this idea that maybe there were more women in the church because the church was a better place for women than just the society at the time. And maybe it wasn't as good of a place for men. If you think of, like, societal privilege and success, right? Mm-hmm. Women are kind of being given positions where they're equal with men in a lot of ways in the early church and are able to gather together and are given this freedom to be leaders or to take care of others and live into some of those things that otherwise they're not able to do. Whereas men would have been the primary earners in a lot of contexts, and so would have been called to leave a lot of that stuff that they were doing. So, you know, there's an appeal there, especially when we look back, we so often look back at scripture and say, well, oh, well, what a, you know, terrible view of women it has, that women aren't allowed to do this, aren't allowed to do that. In context, sometimes it feels like maybe that scripture is actually very progressive for its time, and that's just as far as it could go in the moment, but,
Yeah, it's capturing, you know, a slice of life from this one period of Jewish slash Roman way of life in a completely foreign part of the world. And I personally definitely walk away from reading Paul and the other writings of the New Testament saying, compared to its contemporaries, the church is rather progressive of the time. Now, we have surpassed its progression in our culture. And so often churches have to now to make that decision. What does that mean for us?
Yeah.
Should we go back to live in that cultural standard, or is the intent that they were driving towards was a greater level of equality, and we are called to carry that torch further?
Right.
And so, you know, I think that
I think
I personally can make the case. That's what I believe is the truth.
Yeah. I think maybe we just don't have a very good understanding of the contemporaries of the time to Christianity
today. Yeah.
Like we have a pretty good understanding of Christianity at that time, but like I don't remember learning about, you know, what it really looked like to be a woman in Greek or Roman culture.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Time.
Yeah, and that's probably because really the only reason you know about Christianity at the time is because you go to church.
Yeah.
You know, like that. And so like this is what we teach. We teach scripture or what the life of Christians maybe look like, but we don't necessarily get into, and here's what Rome was doing at this time. Here's, you know, if you were just a Roman woman, here's how you would be experiencing life. So when Paul is writing to Christian women at the time, and it's vastly different than the expectations, how, you know, how can we compare and contrast those things? Maybe we as the church don't do a very good job of bringing in those things. And I think scripture is best read when you have that cultural context and information attached to it.
Yeah.
Because then it's saying, like, what is the primary audience hearing, seeing, experiencing when they get these words, and then trying to take just those words and apply them to a modern context can maybe get you in a lot of trouble, and maybe get you into places where you're making vast jumps and leaps of logic that initial hearers would not make. You know, and so I think that's an important part of it. All right, so we're saying here the church maybe started off heavily female. In its population and its pews. Maybe there was a lot of male leadership, but when it came to people that were supporting church, and even Paul will kind of highlight often that there are females who are supporting his ministry, that the givers to him and what he's doing are women.
And the Gospels will highlight that of Jesus' followers as well. I mean, the 12 guys who were hanging out with Jesus weren't earning any money, and so it was women who were traveling who were supporting them.
All right, so then...
Never thought about that.
So then it's no necessarily major shock or fear for the modern church to say, like, if your church is mostly women, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, and that's not necessarily call to alarm of, like, you got to change gears to get more men in the pews and change their language and how you're presenting things to get more men active and things like that. All right, so that's kind of like the little bit of history that she's going to draw from, and I think it's interesting. So what do we do with all this? Maybe that's the next question, right? Like, how do we approach this information? Okay, so we can acknowledge there's more women here, maybe in the modern church. We can acknowledge that's not a bad thing, and that's not sign for distress. But what do you do now? Like, stay the course? Do we need to be actively engaged in saying, how can we attract more men or more not emotionally driven mindsets of faith? What do we do, Pastor David? You know, how do you take this?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the gospel of Jesus is for all people, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, I want to find ways for that message to appeal to as many people as I can, regardless of their gender, right? I mean, men, women, emotionally intelligent, unintelligent, you know, the whole gamut. I want you to know the love of Christ. And so if that means that we, you know, find more stereotypically, quote, manly ways to talk about Jesus, then so be it, right? Mm-hmm. If I bring you in here under the guise of a hunting trip, and you learn, you know, you have a chance to learn about Jesus or experience, you know, love and grace in a new way, great, let's do it, right? If I bring you in here like what's his name, Cyril of Jerusalem, and because you're dating so and so, okay, I'll take that. But I think we also need to use this information to lift up the service that's already being done and the people who are already present. and highlight that as well, because I think it's a voice at the table that is incredibly valuable that has not been heard. Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to say, is I don't think this necessarily calls for alarm that the church is overwhelmingly feminine in that way. I think it's more that it is, and that voice is lost, like, mm-hmm. because our leadership is not feminine, or historically is not.
Yeah.
So then what do you do about that? Because I think that is a problem.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So, I think we're getting on some good things. So, one, lift up better, vocal female leaders here in your local congregation, mm-hmm. in, book sales, in speaking tours, mm-hmm. in all these things, and who pastors quote from the thing, lifting up greater female voices. And it also says, you don't necessarily have to do stuff just to try to hopefully get men involved, because the church can live with the percentages that it's at. So you don't necessarily have to be we got to do more sports analogies from the pulpit, or, you don't have to do that in order to your church to grow or to sustain.
Right.
But it does remind us that there is percentages of the population that are harder to get to.
Yeah.
And that necessarily isn't how you get there. It has to be more intentional or direct or one-on-one. And I think one of the things in the conclusion that I would say is interesting, that is a good reminder, is maybe mostly women are doing those jobs is because really mostly women have the time to do those jobs too. We live in a culture where if one party in a couple stays home while the other one goes to work, it's most likely a female in that scenario. And so it's no surprise that necessarily females want to contribute to their local congregation because they have more time. And they want to get their kids raised in church or church-related activities because they're more invested in those aspects of their kids' lives because they see it and witness it and they're part of it. I can say, as a youth director here, if I need to call a parent to try to schedule something, I often call moms because they are invested, more likely to be invested in what their kid has going on week to week.
Yeah.
And not to say is that stereotypical? And I would say, yes, I also find it to be true.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I do think there's, at some level, starting to be a shift in this. And it's just not to say that the overall dynamic is not still present, but far more, couples, both members of the couple are working, or couples are split, and so both parents are working in their own households, wherever that might be. And in many places, dads are now staying home. That's a growing trend. I don't want to say it's, taking over the nation or anything, but it is a growing trend.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to be aware and particular in how we speak about it and how we react to those situations to make sure that we're honoring whatever way these families are serving their family, right?
Sure.
That if you're choosing to serve your family by working, we honor that. And if you're choosing to serve your family by staying home, we honor that. And if you're choosing to serve your congregation by, giving of your time because you have that time to give because you're not working outside the home right now, we honor that. And if you're choosing to come when you are working, we honor that, right? And how do we move away from the language of, well, let's call all the moms to help teach Sunday school,
mm-hmm.
or let's call all the moms to be on the children's faith formation team, or let's call all the moms to, how do we move away from that? Even something as simple, this is our preschool, right? We still have class moms,
mm-hmm.
right? And why does it have to be a class mom, right?
Class parent.
Class parent does not sound as good, right? It's a weird, but I know that there are dads who are available during the day or who are working during the day or who are like me and have schedules that would allow them to be able mm-hmm. to do stuff during the day, but I'm not going to sign up to be a class mom. I mean, no, that's my own thing too, right? That's
sure.
my own issue, but there's language like that. It just, in how we use the language mm-hmm. matters, and language matters.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also for men who are in leadership in their church, usually paid leadership in the church,
mm-hmm.
to model for the other men, being a part of the church is not just doing my job. It's not just being upfront. It's not just speaking out. It's not just being the leader. It's modeling how can we model doing the behind the scenes job, by being visibly in support ministry. I think helps men see that that is valuable, important, and for everyone. It's not just, a female or masculine thing, but it is for the church at large, and for all of us. And I can say with honesty, I would love to be a stay-at-home dad. So I'm hoping my wife strikes it rich so that I can stay home.
Yeah.
I would be an awesome class mom for a group of preschool kids. I think I would have a lot of fun. So,
well, this is the year to be a class mom because you can't do anything anyway. So you get all the credit of having signed up to be it, but you don't have to show up for anything. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Sounds like my kind of job.
Yeah, look, I can cut some orange slices. You know, I can do those things. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, all right. So probably don't have strong conclusions here, but I think the question itself is interesting of like, is this an issue and what do we do with this? I think it's things we can still wrestle with as a local congregation and hopefully the church at large.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
you know what I've been thinking about this whole time?
What's that?
That scene from Robin Hood, Men in Tights, where they sing about being man or men in tights.
Right.
Yeah. The whole time that's been playing in my head.
There you go.
Men, manly men.
All right. Hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. This is post-Thanksgiving, right? So yes. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you ate all the turkey that Patrick refuses to eat because he is the Grinch of Thanksgiving.
Damn.
I don't know what the Grinch of Thanksgiving is called, but it's Patrick. It's Patrick. There it is. Yep.
That's fine.
Wouldn't touch him with a 29.5-foot pole.
Look, the peaks of Halloween and Christmas are there, and Thanksgiving is the valley below.
Wow.
Between.
Oh, my goodness. Yikes. Gauntlets being thrown left and right. Well, listeners, if you would like to argue with Patrick about his take on Thanksgiving, I highly urge you to do so. Take to the streets. Let him know. Oh, don't take to the streets. Take to our Facebook page. That'd be great. Yeah. Go to Beyond Sunday Podcast on Facebook or send us an email, beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com, because you can find our episodes anytime, any day, or any day of the week and share those out so that you all can enjoy all this fun with your friends and family throughout this holiday season.
Yeah. Happy Advent.
If you agree with Patrick about Thanksgiving, keep it to yourself.
Yeah, no,
we don't want to hear it.
Are you trying to Patrick?
Yeah, that's all we're looking for.
Happy Advent season we're entering in.
Happy Advent, yeah.
Yes, next week we will have another book of the Bible.
Yeah.
We're going back to the Bible.
And then at some point, Patrick and I will get into our annual argument about the role of Advent versus Christmas. It'll be great.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to.
Like Thanksgiving.
Traditions.
Advent, overrated.
You're overrated.
That's probably true. Well, probably not, actually. Maybe I'm underrated. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.